Welcome to this Tuesday, September 21st, Board of Trustees meeting for the Great River Regional Library. It's good to see everyone in person. We do have a quorum, right? It seems like we're missing a few people, but yes, a few maybe. Okay, Al will be here soon. Unless Mahato comes later. So then moving on to agenda item number 3. There have been no changes to the agenda, so we would need to move the agenda. So I'd be open to a motion.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Second.
First and second. Any questions or comments? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion has carried. Just a little side note before we get started. We have a hefty agenda. If you didn't notice, we've got 2 presentations. We have 2 closed sessions. So if you feel a little rushed by your chair tonight, I'll apologize in advance. And I will stop and try to get questions as we need it. But we really want to give those presenters some time. We don't get a lot of those. And the closed sessions are important. And we do have a number of important action items. So hang on to your hats. Here we go. Item number 4.1, the July 20th, 2021 board meeting minutes.
So moved.
Second.
First and a second. Any questions or comments?
No, but I'll just keep an eye on it.
Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion has carried. 4.2, the July 20th, 2021 personnel committee meeting minutes. I'm open to a motion.
Make a motion to approve those.
Made by Jane.
Second.
Seconded by JC. Any questions or comments? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion has carried. Public forum. Do we have anyone signed up? Any public there that's not part of our presentations or staff members? Doesn't look like it, so no public forum tonight. Moving on to the financials, number 6. 6.1, bills were emailed, and the addendum was emailed. We have any questions? Amy is here.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I just had one question on the bulldog photos that were $163.30 times 4, 5. What were those? Okay.
Bulldog photos.
Yep, there was 5
okay.
Of them.
Back to you on that. I'd be open to a motion to approve.
Move.
Motion made by Dave. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Ed. Any other questions or comments? Good evening, Al. Welcome. Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion has carried. Moving on to 6.2, financial reports. Those were also emailed to you. Would be open to a motion.
I'd move approval.
Motion made by Lee.
Second.
Seconded by Jane. Any questions or comments? Hearing none. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion has carried. Thank you. Under the consent agenda, a number of items, 7.1 through 7.8. They were all in your packet. We will take those all in
Move
one
for approval,
action.
Madam Chair.
Second.
Motion made by Dave, seconded by Randy. Any questions or comments? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion has carried. Moving on to item number 8, we have nothing under communications this evening. Thank you for all that, board. Moving on to item number 9, we're on to our presentations. So this is a time we don't get a ton of presentations and have guests here, so we're all excited. 9.1, I would like to welcome from Kimball, the Kimball Building Committee. We're going to start with you, Barry Belknap and Margaret Arnold.
Hey,
I don't think they've arrived quite
Himbold
yet.
Himbold isn't here, so no, we're going
to
move on.
Yeah, they were expecting to be a little later in the agenda, so they'll be here probably in another 5 minutes. You guys are rocking it. we do have the Howard-like people here. If it's that little pep talk
they give them. Yeah. So let's move on with Howard Lake Library. We've got Nick Hagenmiller, City Administrator, and Susan Morgan with the BKV Group, and one other that I don't have their name. So if you'll introduce yourself, that'd be great.
Hi, I'm Pete Zimmerman. I'm the mayor of Howard Lake, and I just want to say thank you for having us here tonight. We're really excited about this project. The council's really excited. The community is very excited. So we hope you enjoy the presentation, and I'm going to turn it over to Nick.
Thanks for joining us, Mayor.
Yeah, and thank you. Once again, my name is Nick. We're going to give a really brief overview of our project here tonight, starting with kind of the timeline that brought us here this evening. As you recall, the Great River Board commissioned a feasibility study of all branches back in 2017 or so. We didn't do too well on that, so we took up the issue, I think, in earnest, but, you know, in earnest is city terms for we're talking about a building project in 2022. As you recall, actually, I don't know how abreast the board is on all of our issues. So, you know, we had all kinds of fun stuff. We encountered some water and perceived air quality issues along with that. We completed a Great River Regional Library System space study that said that we were way undercounting in terms of what we needed for our facility. And ultimately, we took that information back to the mayor and council to start a more formal engagement with BKV. Over the last year, we've really taken a strong look at our current site and determined that we can't do a whole lot with that. I'm willing to bet that if any of you folks have a two-stall garage, you have a bigger garage than we have library. So this is something that is long overdue. One of the interesting notes that we did learn throughout this process was the original feasibility study from 1979 when we built our current space. That determined the space that we were building in 1979 to be too small for that day, and we've been operating under that since. So I think this project is long overdue. It's exciting, and we're finally ready to step forward with it. So over the last several months, we have hired BKV to do the formal design development of our space. As you look under the column for 2021, we did a full pre-design to the state of Minnesota. We were a successful recipient of the Minnesota Department of Education grant program for $730,000, which is pretty cool. We actually applied for $700,000. They gave us $730,000, so we're proud of that. Currently, Susan and her team are going through the more formal schematic design, and we hope to actually break ground in early 2022. Just for some site information, as you look up at the top of the screen, Howard Lake, a town of about 2,000, everything is pretty well condensed. But if you look, the existing library really does not line up with the core of our downtown. So with this move, we are moving to the proposed location, which is at the bottom of the screen. That's the former site of the high school in Howard Lake, which has since been located in between Winston and Howard Lake as we're a consolidated school district. This is within eyesight of downtown. We hope that this is going to be a nice anchor for future development. And it's also part of a nice park project that we've brought forward as well. I'm going to turn it over to Susan, who's going to explain some of the site characteristics of our proposed site, and also explain why we didn't go with a more modest renovation as well.
Thank you very much, Nick. So a little bit of context for folks. The existing Howard Lake Library building was constructed in 1979. It is a two-story building made out of site-cast concrete, which is the most immovable, renovatable kind of construction that you can have. The library was constructed without an elevator, and so the Great River Regional Library studies that have happened since that time and even the planning during that time, you know, there's really an intent to provide a universally accessible library. And for a building of this scale, really it wants to be one story. The existing library site is one of those exciting ones for designers but challenging for construction. It slopes almost a full story and a half east to west, and almost a full story and a half north to south. So you've got a concrete building. It's pushed into a hill. There are three windows in the current library space. The library operates out of 1,500 square feet. Our study within 2020 really explored, is it possible to reuse the building? There's benefits, whether it's from cost, from embodied carbon. And the challenges are we would invest so much money in trying to address the foundation issues related to mold, related to installing an elevator, that we wouldn't be gaining enough to meet the baseline requirements set forth by the library system for operation. We did explore, as you see on the lower left-hand side, whether we could actually produce and install a one-story library on the site. Again, cost-benefit-wise, with all of the earth we would have to move, it just wasn't enough of a value for return. And as Nick showed on the last slide, and as you see on the right-hand side, the opportunity to bring the library downtown, moving it a few blocks west, a few blocks south, puts us in a better pedestrian travel area, grounds us between the new Central Park and Jaeger Park, and gives us lots of great frontage. I should also note that this library is pursuing net zero construction, and in part that's because this particular site has great access to solar. So to give you a small summary of the floor plan, and I will move from left to right here. The library has all of the features of a library of this size, which is to say now the library will have collection space for every level, early readers, elementary, teens, and adults. The library will now have study rooms, multiple, so available for all ages. There will actually be a single workroom for staff to work out of, with enough elbow space for collections management, as well as the necessary work of managing the library. We will have a dedicated story time room that can also be used as a quiet study area when it's not in use by children. The other piece that you're seeing, the kind of anchor that's tilted to one side, we have a community room which is intended for daytime use by residents of Howard Lake and for event use by the library. Being grounded in the park, we are also able to provide and embed, and there was a value benefit to the city, of providing public restrooms for the adjacent splash pad area of the park. And so these bathrooms serve both the park and the library. And the red arrows that you see indicate that we have an entrance facing City Hall and downtown. We have one that faces west. And then those restrooms, again, are actually accessible both directly from the outside for park visitors and from the inside for the lobby. And the library is designed with a line of security here so that when the library is closed, you can still take advantage of the community room. I've run on a little bit long, but that's because I'm passionate about the project, as Nick notes. We did also want to share some preliminary studies of exterior massing. The images on the left are inspirational images. The two on the right reflect the project. And the shaping that you see is in part in related to our performance, which is to say those roof slopes actually match the best line and angle for solar panels. And so almost three quarters of the roof are covered with solar panels, and that provides 100% of the energy needed to run and operate the building.
Yeah, so tonight I think ultimately what we're looking for from this board is approval to relocate our library from our current site to the proposed site. And along with this, I want to show the cost consequence because the mayor and council obviously need the confidence from you folks to issue the general obligation bonds and so forth. So this is a really high level sources and uses for the project. You'll note a total project cost of about $4.3 million. Now I understand relativity is a big thing, so I'll explain it to you this way. This will more than double our current debt service level for the city of Howard Lake, excluding street utilities, of course. And with that, if you look at the actual sources itself, we have been fortunate. I think I missed typed, it's actually $730,000 in a grant fund. We're actively seeking additional funds. And the other that you'll note there is the USDA Community Facilities Program. This is a really big deal to small cities like us. This allows us to extend the amortization of the debt out 40 years. But again, with that, the requirements both of USDA as well as MDE require that we don't just put up a tin can building. So this really will be something that is well built, energy efficient, as we said. I think this will be net zero, maybe even the first in the state of its kind. But ultimately something that both the community and hopefully Great River is proud of. So with that, questions, comments? Otherwise, we really hope that you move on this. Thank you.
Thank you for the presentation. Open it up to the board. Any questions or comments? Lee.
Square footage?
About 7,000 square feet.
Wow. Okay. On one level?
Yes.
Okay.
And again, for comparison, our current space is 1,500 square feet.
I heard that.
Yeah, this is a wild expansion for us.
What are you building in or equipping the building to accommodate what's now contemporary electronic access, internet access,
that
sort of thing?
Had good discussions on this, and I'm not as eloquent as Susan.
So we've specifically designed the building for Wi-Fi throughout the building, and because we're adjacent to the public park, we've talked about the need for Wi-Fi coverage to extend into the parking lot. We know that folks like to use that outdoor Wi-Fi when a library is closed, so that's really important for us. I should also note that we have a reading garden, which is accessible just outside the story time area for outdoor reading. That will also have coverage, and I think we're interested in continuing the dialogue with Great River as we develop and we head into the development of our overall technology package for the community room and study rooms.
Madam Chair, a question I have, is this brought to the public already? Have you had public hearings on this, or are you looking for our board to approve it and then you got to move forward to the next?
Yeah, level? So that's a great question. USDA requires a public hearing at the onset of the project. We have held that statutory public hearing. We're just about ready to start a more formal public engagement process that's much more fluffy and warm that we seek, that we hope to solicit more feedback from the community.
Within this period, we have been working closely with representatives from Great River Regional Library and with our librarian. We've also had dialogue with the Friends of the Library. And so what you see here today is a representative of those voices and the council and mayor chiming in and giving our team direction.
Mr. Chair?
Sure.
Thank you. Thanks for coming all the way from Howard Lake. Good to see you.
Hi, Mike.
So, of course, on the Wright County side, when we speak of public hearings, is it going to be available for maybe evening public hearings, county-related business such as ditches or local option sales tax type things? We're kind of looking for things in that part of the county sometimes. And then technology-wise, will you be able to do the Zoom and the Teams and all those things in that room, and how many seat room is that community room?
Yeah, good question, Mike. So to answer the first question, yes, we already keep all of our facilities open for intergovernmental uses already. In fact, Virgil Hawkins, county engineer, will be using our event center, I think on October 12th, on the local option sales tax. So it's already something that staff level already has active dialogue on already. This space will be outfitted with the latest and greatest cool techie stuff that I don't know or pretend to understand, including the Zoom room meetings and the other kind of cool thing that we have in here is actually a soft interview room for our police department. You know, if you folks are familiar with that, it's like it sounds, an interview room maybe for vulnerable adults or children that have experienced trauma. And maybe we're not taking them into the police department or a more institutional setting, but they'll have a space in this library that will have appropriate technology and things for those people as well. And I think the community room is, I don't remember how many, 60 people occupancy.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Would that require 24-hour staffing in some case?
It does not. Susan is incredibly mindful of that. So if you look at this, if you can imagine a fictitious line going straight up, yep. We'll be able to section off the community room and the exterior bathrooms to fully secure the library, but still allow for 24/7 use potentially of the community room and those bathrooms without commingling.
Which way is the parking lot? Okay.
Any other questions or comments?
Madam Chair, having bathrooms right up front, is that going to be an issue aesthetically or something? I mean, I don't know. Mostly the rule is bathrooms are kind of put at a different spot and stuff. And I understand your point about keeping it to the public park, but how is that going to represent aesthetically?
So good question about the aesthetics of where the bathrooms are placed. So the large bank of restrooms is accessed directly off of the lobby. But really, we sort of think of most of the library visitors as just entering straight in the doors and coming in the library. And our goal and our intent was we think of those kids who say, I got to go right now, right? You can't run all the way through the lobby to the restrooms. And so within the library, there are two single fixture restrooms. Those are still at the front, as you mentioned, but it's a challenge when you have a building with two entries because there is no back any longer. We felt that we've located these in a way which puts them out of line of sight. They're actually in a space that has a lower ceiling than the main collections area. And intentionally, they're set back the width of this lactation room so that really there isn't line of sight to people coming and going. Things like noise and odors shouldn't be a challenge. And as it relates to the lactation room, we wanted to make sure that that felt more private. So, in fact, its door is just behind the circ desk on the other side. So it's a good question, and I guess my answer is we've done the best that we can, and we feel like we've tried to balance some of those challenges.
Madam Chair, being a member of the safety committee here, has it been looked at as far as security measures, lockdown, if there has to be? There's actually three entrances. Just wondering how that's controlled. The back entrance, is that a one-way or is that just an exit? Or, well, there's one there too, I guess.
So from the story time room, that is an exit only, and that's, again, for access to a fenced-in and gated reading area. These other three represent, as you know, with your eyes for safety, the three building entries. We have had conversations about whether or not this building will be card access controlled. I believe we have to continue that dialogue because for a building of this scale, both relative to the city that currently doesn't use access control within their facilities and then relative to Great River, I believe the direction was that at present we were not going to be providing access control, but we're still early in our phase, and so I think those discussions are ongoing and the insights you note are really valuable.
Dave, other questions, comments?
Really, really impressive. Looks great. So really appreciate you coming to present to us today. Mayor Pete, Susan, and Nick, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Okay, then we do have an item on our agenda. It's 9.2.1, Howard Lake Library Relocation and Construction Approval. As Nick mentioned in the presentation, it's page 39 in your packet. So I would be open for a motion.
That'd be an opportunity for locals to score some points.
Madam Chair, I'll make a motion to approve relocation of the Howard Lake Public Library to the location proposed in the City Library Construction Grant Award.
Motion made by Mike. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Seconded by JC. Any other comments or questions? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion has carried. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And thanks for all your work on that.
Yeah, good luck.
Yes. Okay, then we will back up to 9.1 with another presentation from Kimball. We have Barry Belknap and Margaret Arnold joining us. I hope I said the names right. So, their building committee.
Good evening, everybody. And again, thank you for the opportunity to come tonight. And I know that Tammy Cohns has been here from our community as mayor a few times. And we tried to get Tammy to come with us and take a bow tonight, and but she had other commitments. So Barry and I are happy to be here. And I'm Margaret Arnold, and I live in Kimball. I'm a volunteer on this project. And Barry Belknap is local as well, Assistant Vice President at the Harvest Bank in Kimball, and he's just been a great volunteer with our committee. And there we go. So as you know, we had a big need and a big rallying point in Kimball, and that was that we heard that Great River Regional Library said that our space was inadequate, and I'll get to that in a second. This definitely focused our efforts. I've been a member of, I'm a charter member of the Kimball Friends of the Library, and we've been talking about a new library and new space since 1998. So there was nothing more that focused us to say that our library was at risk of leaving our community. And so we worked over a number of meetings with probably about 22 people to really identify a vision. And that vision was not only, you know, what did we want for our community, where do we want this library, how do we want it to serve? And really our vision ended up becoming very simple, and it's actually on the brick and mortar of our building, and it's a library to serve all. As you know, that we are now located at the corner of Spruce and Elm. We're on a half-acre site. We had some very community-oriented landowners that the city purchased the land from at a reduced cost. So that got us off the ground really well. We're visible from both Highway 55 and 15. We have ease of access, parking, and we're located near schools. We're located near businesses, so it's very accessible. As you know, we were in the historic City Hall. It did not meet ADA accessibility requirements, and as you know, there was many issues with that space in terms of not only reading space but circulation and collection. And here's our new library today. We have a 4,200 square foot building. We have prairie style. It was interesting to see the previous presentation. We have 3,200 square feet of library space and 1,100 for the community room. And the community room is a lovely space that can have lecture style seating for about 50 people or square table or rectangle tables like this for programming. And we have, not only do we have 15 car parking space on one side, but we have street, very, very friendly street parking on the other. So there's two entrances to the library. So some key dates. We found out that in 2016 that this body was going to do a library assessment plan. And so we, as a result, formed a task force. The city purchased the land in 2018, and we obtained schematics. I'll get to that in a second. But we launched the campaign with a foundational gift, and Lorraine Gregory was our longtime librarian in Kimball, and she kicked us off with a two-figure gift. I think it was it 10 or 15? I can't remember. 15. A $15,000 gift, and so we just had the perfect start to our fundraising particularly for the state grant, the construction grant. And as a result, in 2019, the city of Kimball appointed a building committee. So we had a task force that did vision, a task force that help raise money for the state grant. And then once we got the state grant, we ended up having the city council appoint a building committee. We signed the agreement. We learned a lot about B3 guidelines and proceeded. We held a groundbreaking. Lee Lenzmeyer was there. It was wonderful. And we found out, the story behind the story is we held a groundbreaking. And the next day, we found out at a city council meeting, the bids that came in were over our budget. And so we had to go out, and it was hard. I that was probably my hardest step, was to say, we have to wait 5 months to go out and rebid this project and put this on hold. I was so worried about the sustainability of the enthusiasm in the committee, but it worked. So instead of breaking ground in the fall after that August groundbreaking, we went and bid out in the winter and started breaking ground in May, right after the pandemic started. And so there were good things and bad things about that. We were early in the pandemic that we weren't starting to feel the construction costs going up with the supply chain issues. But we also were like, how do we do this as a community? How do we gather? How do we even meet as a group to even try to open this library? But it also provided another opportunity when we started to see some shortfalls. We had a little bit of a shortfall with the state grant. We had some overage on some of the things that we added towards the end of the project. So we started another fundraising project in last fall called the Opening Together Challenge. And so we went back out to the community for a one-to-one match, and we'll go through those numbers in a second. We publicly opened the building on December 7th, and just a few weeks ago, and I'll show you a picture, we were able to install our donor wall of honor for our $1,000 and above donors. Okay.
Well, to echo Margaret, thank you, everybody, and thanks for giving us the opportunity to present on this. This first bullet is really my favorite point of this whole thing. I came into this project probably a couple years in after it started, and it was pretty apparent to me right out of the gate that we had the right people in the right place at the right time. And as Margaret discussed some of the challenges that we went through this, it was really having the right leadership that were able to, you know, really maintain the vision and see through the challenges and get over those hurdles. I think without the people we had in place, both on the volunteer side and at the city side, it would have been hard. And on top of that, of course, the support from this group here was key. And as we'll get to it in a little bit in the financials, we were very heavy on the fundraising piece, and I'll show you how that breaks down in just a second here. But I think the narratives help sustain things, too. As Margaret mentioned, again, we're going back some things, but Lorraine Gregory as the librarian, everybody knew for decades that helped. Rhea Hurley was this close to being an astronaut with NASA at one point, which is a fabulous story, and then some other well-known community members. The Rice Builders was outstanding. They not only from the standpoint of bringing quality project and keeping the project on task, but also being, no other way to say it, but civic-minded, donating some of their design time, but then also working with a number of contractors that didn't have experience with some of the particular aspects of this project around the B3. So they were very good. And we had support also from a friend that helped us out with the website. So I didn't put a lot of hard numbers on this. This was more just to show how the numbers broke down overall. Our project was about $1,200,000. The majority of that, you can see just about 70% was the building and design itself. Furnishings, another 13%. Land was relatively inexpensive, again, thanks to community members that sold us that. The grant really surprised us, and I threw this in separately because it did prompt some of these extra things that I think are long-term benefits on the environmental side, and then also prevailing wage requirements that we didn't expect. And this was a heavy volunteer project, and I think we're all much better educated in the process than we were when we started. But that was, again, one of those challenges when we discovered this hurdle, seeing it through. And then funding sources. So we raised, of the total $1.2 million, cash donations were right about 50%. I don't remember the exact number off the top of my head, but it was right around $600,000. The grant funding was a huge piece, a little over a third. Non-cash donations, the biggest single thing was St. Benedict's College donated a ton of library shelves. Hard to know what we would have paid for that, but I think easily $60,000, $70,000, if not more. That was huge. And City of Kimball, of course, covered some of the costs as well. Donor concentration, I think, is probably everybody knows that works with donors. It wasn't just an 80-20 rule for this project. It was more like 20-85. We had of the, I think it was about 50 donors that contributed 85% of the funds we raised. And the remaining, there was 200 or 250 small donors that, you know, also were participating in the process. And this, I don't know if this is useful for anybody, but just to show some of the detailed breakdowns, what I tried to do here, it's a little bit hard to quantify because there was donations and there are some things we still want to do just a little bit. So I tried to throw this in as if this was all new material, new product bought at market, which was not necessarily the case. But then we also spent, I want to say we spent about $30 or $40 of project funds on PR and fundraising and website hosting. So this includes basically no administrative cost per se on the raising of all those funds. That was strictly volunteer efforts.
So you'll see a picture here of how our collection size increased. I'll go through the numbers here in a little bit, but these are the shelves that were donated by St. Ben. So the story there is that Rice Companies donated a schematic that was worth about $18,000 with a relationship they have with a local business. And that person that worked at Rice ended up being the executive director of facilities at St. Ben's and said, hey, we're getting rid of all these library shelves at Clemens Library. Would you like them? So even though you see that these are donated, they were completely repurposed and, you know, cut down, new end caps put on. So we did a lot of volunteer work to size these and make sure that they fit the collection. So I asked Carla for some numbers recently, and you can see that in 2021 that the circulation numbers have already increased, even, you know, what are we at, 9 months into the year. So I know that a lot of you get these facts as well. So the visits with a checkout are up 5%. The print, the adult print, juvenile adult print circulation is up over 2019. And one of the anecdotally, maybe the shelves are easier to browse by doing that. Like other regional trends, the media and music and video are down, but the registered borrowers is at 666, and that's a gain of 97 people since the beginning of the year. In-person programming is slowly coming back. We did a lot outside this summer, but it's coming along. This is a children's area, very fun and colorful and easily seen by staff, which was a key design element. And we were able to get these Jaunty Craft. We knew the owner of the company that had Jaunty Craft, and that was kind of fun to make that connection, and they came and visited the library. This is our circulation desk that's seen by both entrances and good sight lines for the library staff to look up. Our community room, we do have a different exit to get out, but the main entrance is through the library, like the other Howard Lake had described, we were able to close this off. And here's our donor wall installation that we just put up for the $1,000 donors and above. So, you know, the variables that we navigated well, we've talked about this a little bit as we close here. We had patience and we took a gamble. The willingness to put the project on hold for 5 months and resolicit that was a really hard step. The city had to had cash to float the $450,000 until we could collect the money. There's a lot of paperwork related to that state grant. Everything had to be in before, so they floated that $450,000, and that has come in. As I mentioned about the pandemic, even though it was a difficult time, it served as a sign of hope during that time.
And I think as we went through the presentation here, I think we covered some of this stuff. But, yeah, holding the volunteer interest was a challenge. It just it stretched out for things that we didn't necessarily anticipate and, you know, couldn't plan for. But, again, going back to leadership, we had the right folks for that. If I could leave one request, and I don't know if our Howard Lake friends that were here earlier understood the implications of the grant, some of that stuff, especially for a volunteer-focused group like us, if we could share that information for anybody looking to do this in the future, or if somebody communicated that out, that was a big piece to get over. We also struggled a little bit sometimes figuring out exactly what piece of the puzzle everybody played. We had the city, we had the Friends of the Library, who basically we had to run all the donations through in order to qualify for the grant. We had a building committee task force that overlapped with both groups to a limited extent, so there was a little bit of juggling to make sure we all knew our roles in that. And then, again, I think this is maybe the principle of beginning with the end in mind. We never really had formal discussions out of the gate if there was a little bit of tail cost to this. So I think that's something that's still being worked out a little bit, is figuring out the few costs that are remaining. We had high hopes for getting a substantial Otto Bremer grant that didn't come through. And then going forward, just ensuring everybody understands their responsibilities with, you know, who cares for the building now? Because it wasn't primarily city-driven. It was city-facilitated, but it was volunteer-driven, and some of those folks are moving on to other activities. Yeah, and I guess, again, I think I was super impressed, as was everybody, with the participation we had. I think Brandy was really our key interlocutor for so much of this process, and you could hardly ask for somebody that was better at communicating the expectations and needs of this group and helping us understand them and really supporting us in achieving stuff and being excellent with feedback. But it just reflected really well on the organization. And again, the clarity there was key. And then, you know, coming across at the finish line, and I don't know exactly who put this together, but the extras that this organization contributed to help us stand that up just was really a nice cherry on top of the project. And so, again, yeah, thanks to Brandy and Carla, our head librarian, who have been excellent partners on this. Did you want to say something about that last point, Margaret?
Sure. You know, we thought coming here at this point in the project, you know, not only to thank Brandy and thank the staff and Karen and thank the board. Again, I mean, I really have chills about the donation that the fund that you gave us at the end. It showed that you believed in us. That was so meaningful to our group. You know, we're getting a couple of phone calls about projects around the state. And I think it would be, you know, we're volunteers, but I think it would be nice to, and if we could be helpful, to put together a primer on what a successful building project looks like that we could hand off to someone like Howard Lake or another library group. You know, what your role is in the project for Vision to move in. I think we navigated that very well, in large part because of Brandy. Your role in serving as a voice of successful projects for other branch libraries, because the volunteers do move on, and we hope this PowerPoint even is helpful. We've gotten a call from Walker, Minnesota, and we're, you know, of course we're like, well, we want to share information, but we don't know how much we should share outside of our, you know, as volunteers. So having something a little bit more official probably would be helpful. This is just showing the summer reading program. One of the things I want to leave you with is promoting literacy and building social infrastructure in our in our new beautiful space. And as we pause and reflect, looking back 4 years to the building process, we weren't just building a building. We realized that throughout the whole process, we were building social infrastructure in our community, from the vision meetings to the, you know, going out for and presentations to fund, you know, one-on-one fundraising asks. And I actually checked this book out at the library, renewed it 3 times, The Palace is for People. Accessible library space builds social infrastructure. Programming builds social cohesion. Friendships develop quickly in libraries. And I feel like we did that. We did that as volunteers. Barry and I are good buds right now and came out of this as friends. And we really are very, I look back on this project truly in my life and think about what a contribution it made to even not only my volunteer life, but also just living in Kimball. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for that inspirational presentation. Any comments or questions from board members?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Mary.
I would just like to say a job well done. Thank you. I applaud you, and thanks to Brandy.
Other comments? Lee.
The key to the effort is the right folks in the community involved. What really presented a predicament on the front end of the project, in order to sell the project to the community, the then mayor made the promise that there would be no city levy dollars to go into the project. And having detailed familiarity with the then mayor, I know that the initial state grant looked like big dollars to her, and as you saw, it was barely half of what was needed. Now, Margaret didn't just come in from the rain. She's had been an experienced fundraiser for St. John's and St. Ben's, and she and a couple other key people in the community, as you saw from the pie chart of where the donated dollars came from, made all the difference in the world. If someone's going to try this in another community, identifying those human resources is absolutely critical, and then how you wind them up and fire them up to do this project, it's beyond my grade level, but the punchline is it was the people that got behind the project when it looked like it was going to die, and I thought it was going to die too, but there was a group of folks that were pleasantly stubborn and made it happen. But don't underestimate the importance of identifying key people in the community to make an effort like this work.
Any other comments or questions for our Kimball folks? I'm just so inspired and so grateful for you as volunteers for doing this and being those right people in the right place at the right time and calling on that leadership in the community. And also grateful for our staff, Brandy and Ryan, for the Howard Lake projects, because I know our staff also puts a lot into those, helping with those the partnerships. So thank you for presenting today and for all the work. Lee, anything else?
Oh, no.
Okay.
This is like the second coming. Thought this sucker was dead.
So. Well, we couldn't be happier to prove you wrong.
Now, yeah. I'm pretty happy too, actually. So,
yeah. Yes.
Great job.
So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for your dedication. Okay. So moving along on to item number 10. We have all of your staff reports, starting on page 41, going through page 51, so 10 pages of reports, and Karen is going to spend a little time with to highlight some of those items.
I'll sit down and talk for a minute here. So I just wanted to add one piece that didn't make the report because we found out after we printed. Great Eagle Public Library, the Great Eagle Library Association, will be celebrating their 31st anniversary this Friday and Saturday. They would have celebrated their 30th last year, but there were good reasons to postpone it. So if you are in the Great Eagle area on the 24th, they will be hosting from 1 to 6. And on the 25th, Saturday, they will be hosting from 10 to 1. They will have cake, they will have coffee, and you'll have the opportunity to donate $25 to receive the association's history book, A History of Great Eagle, Minnesota. So I wanted to make sure to let you know that that was happening this week.
You may encounter road construction.
Yeah, yeah. You might want to take your time getting there. So. Google might not be right.
Time on that again?
It's Friday the 24th from 1 to 6 and Saturday the 25th from 10 to 1. In the building reports, Brandy did a nice job of describing what's going on with the St. Cloud building. I've been hesitant to turn lights on and off in this room because they're related to the lighting panel. You never know what's going to happen. So we're having issues with the lighting panel. We're also having major issues with one of the chillers. So far, the city's handling that within their insurance claim, but we'll keep you posted on how that goes. The estimate for replacing the first chiller, I think, was something like $130,000. So it will be a major expense, and there's two chillers. One is not working, and one is really loud. So just know our folks behind the scenes have been working on that very hard. And thanks to those of you who responded to the When Is Good about possibly having a logic model development session with the Wilder Foundation. Unfortunately, none of those dates worked out very well. I've also realized that we probably need to keep open meeting in mind. So I'll be working with Lisa and the Wilder Foundation to kind of sort out who we will ask to attend. The goal is to have as many board members who can be there remain in compliance in open meeting law and not have a quorum of any one board or committee. So, thank you for expressing your interest. Those of you who respond will be the first ones I call. So, any other questions or thoughts on the committee reports?
Questions or thoughts on pages 41 through 51 in your packet? Those are all just information.
So, Karen?
Yes.
When are we planning to start further work on the diversity, equity, and inclusion book?
Those components were passed in the strategic plan in July, so those parts are moving forward now as part of the strategic plan. One of the major components is our LSTA work. We received a grant to train our staff in diversity, equity, and inclusion areas, so all of our public service staff are taking the Homeless Library Academy right now, which talks about working with people with mental illness and working with the homeless population. Huda Ibrahim's Filson Partners is doing some work with us to do a supervisor training on interviewing and bias, but that won't happen until we can meet in person with a larger group. And then She's also reviewing many of our job descriptions and our policies. So that work is moving forward. Trying to think what else was in that grant. And then All Staff Day, which was part of the consent agenda, will be closing in April and doing a number of those trainings as part of our All Staff Day next spring. So those are the big things that are happening right now, but there's other work happening as well.
Thank you. Okay. Any other questions? Okay, moving on to item number 11, committee reports. Turn it over to my buddy here, Ed.
We had a couple of items that needed approval. One was the budget projections, and maybe Amy, do you want to go through some of that, what you went through with the finance committee?
We talked about the possibility of things looking like there will be a budget surplus at the end of 2021. We have some COVID-related carryover things that are preventing regular expenditures being spent as they were budgeted. So we're looking at about $244,000 at the end of the year in November. We're looking to present that to the committee and carry that over to the 2023 budget. We also talked about expanding our CDA purchasing program to include financial institutions and that are located within the six signatories. An approval was made, and we will be having representation in five of our six counties by the end of 2021.
So I'll make a motion that we approve the financial report as presented to the board. There's another person.
1 second.
Do you want to explain a little bit about
That shouldn't vote? So just to highlight, part of that committee report includes designating funds from our CDs into local banks. Two of our board members actually have some tied to local banks, and so we wanted to call that out as a potential conflict of interest, and I believe they'll both be abstaining from the vote. Ed Pop is on the advisory board for Falcon and National Bank, and Jane Dietz is a stakeholder at the Bank of Elk River. Neither of them worked with Amy to determine which banks were the local institutions we were looking at. So if you have any questions about that, we do want to call that out to your attention. And then if there are any other board members who have stake in local banks, being on a board or having any kind of shareholder interest, that might be something to be aware of and let people know.
Okay. Thank you. So Ed made the motion, and there's a second. Who seconded?
Maybe I should rescind that motion, too.
Ed actually is going to rescind his motion because of that involvement. So Lee makes
the
motion,
yeah.
And Mike a second.
Yeah, okay. Don't trust me by then.
So any questions or comments?
Actually, Madam Chair, Robert's Rules of Order says the committee should move to approve the report, and then there should be a second. So if Ed makes the motion as a committee, he's not making it personally. So
Okay.
Oh, but there's still
just Robert Rules of Order. But
thanks, Dave. So then we'll go back to the original.
So we go back to the original of Ed making the motion.
On behalf of the committee.
On behalf of the committee. Mike seconding.
Madam Chair, may I just ask a quick question? Is it possible to get a list of the banks that will be investing in, just to make sure that other members aren't?
Yes.
Yep.
Did members get the finance report?
They were on
documents.
If you can
name those four banks.
So the four banks that we're going to start with are Stearns Bank, the Bank of Elk River, Minnesota National Bank, and Falcon National Bank.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Hearing none, we've got two abstentions, Jane and Ed. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion has carried. Okay, thank you. And then moving on to the Central Minnesota Libraries Exchange Board. Jane,
yes,
you're going to give that report.
We just had a meeting on September 10th, and we had two new members that we welcomed. Mahara was one, and Karen is back on the board. We did elect new officers. Our audit showed there was no new concerns. We did delay our strategic planning until December 1st. And we do have 10 new $1,000 grants that will be given out before December of this year. And our next meeting is December 1st.
Okay. Anything, any questions or comments or anything anyone else wants to add? Also was at the meeting. Okay, great. We are moving right along. You guys are amazing, but we're on schedule. So, unfinished business number 12. We have nothing under unfinished business. So moving on to new business under 13, financial policy revisions. Page 53 in your packet, and I'll ask Amy to walk us through this.
So what I mainly did on the deposit and investment revisions was clarification to timing of our financial designations, simply because we have a retirement at the end of this year, and our policy was stated that we only did that once a year. So I added a little verbiage in there to clarify that. I also added the inclusion of the NCUA, which is National Credit Union Administration, as an approved government insurer of credit unions to allow the library to invest in purchase CDs at local credit unions as part of that program that we just talked about. I also added Minnesota statute references to tools that are approved for investments of public funds, and clarified some policy language, mainly as a goal to simplify, but include the current practices and goals that that we have for the library.
Okay, so this is an action item to make these policy changes. So looking for a motion to approve Financial Policy Chapter 5, Deposit and Investment Revisions to Best Reflect Changes, Additions, and Clarifications to Current Great River Regional Library Deposit and Investment Practices.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Motion made by Randy. Is there a second? Seconded by Mary. Any questions or comments or discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion has carried. Moving on to agenda item number 13.2. This is page 59 in your packet. And I'll welcome Jamie and Brandy to join us, or just Brandy. They had some great information in their reports about this, but we're looking at approving changes to Patron Services Chapter 1. Circulation Services.
Good evening. Can we sit close together without reverbing?
I'm not turning this on unless I have to.
Okay. All right. So after the board had approved a budget that did not rely on fines revenue for us for next year, then Jamie and I worked with the rest of LST and others to develop policies in order to support going fines free for the library. And so that is what we are presenting to you tonight and have discussed with the board a few times. So what we have here is both the messy, lots of changes on it, of the former policy, and also a clean copy showing you what the policy is right now. The major changes is that obviously we went through and we deleted all references to late fees, fines, or processing fees. We got rid of those. We also added language to discontinue refunds, which is a pretty significant change and will create a lot of efficiencies for our finance department as well as some other places like that. So we changed that. We reinforced that patron purchased replacement copies will not be accepted in lieu of payment. And that was really sort of the weight of the significant changes. We also removed some redundant language. We took the opportunity to just clean it up and make it simpler for patrons to understand. That was one of our big priorities, was we looked at other policies, fines-free patron service policies that we found throughout the country, and we found some we really liked the accessibility of their language in that it was really easy for patrons to understand. So we used some of that as a reference point to try to make our own policy a little easier for patrons. So that's where we got rid of redundant language. We simplified the table. We clarified language where we could. And then did some other grammatical edits, formatting changes, and those kinds of things to just make it as simple and easy as we could. Any questions?
So this also is an action item. We have been, I think the first time we heard this or entertained thinking about this was in February, possibly. So we've been working on this for a long time. You have been working on it for a long time. We've known about it for a long time. So hoping that we've had plenty on this. So action item, so I'd be open to a motion.
Well, it's no surprise, so I guess I'd move it.
Thank you, Lee. Is there a second?
Second it.
Jane, second. Any questions or comments?
Madam Chair, one thing on this one. So if I lose a book, I checked it out, I lose a book, and whatever, I don't say nothing, and then all of a sudden, 3 months, 4 months later, I come back and I want to check out another book, what happens?
Great question. So first off, people still have to return their stuff. Mm-hmm. They still have to return their stuff. And we do have mechanisms within the policy to make it so that you got to return your stuff. One of the big things is that if someone has an item that's been out overdue, more than 10 days, it was already in policy that you couldn't check out more items. However, that was a kind of needed staff mediation to make that work. So one of the things that we'll be doing is switching that to where it's a technology piece. So Horizon will count for us, our database, our ILS that we use, that will count for us so that even if the staff forget to count, it will still prohibit you from checking out another item until that late overdue thing is turned in. The other piece is we will still be sending bills for the cost of items that get set to lost as long as that cost is above the billing threshold. So people will be notified, hey, there was an item, it's been set to lost, and now you need to pay for it. And that's also where that no refunds piece comes in. Because once they pay for it, even if they find it on the car seat or in the cabin or somewhere else, now it's theirs. We're not going to refund it. But yes, great question. We still want our stuff back. And we will be talking as well with our staff. We have a meeting coming up on September 28th to start talking with them about how to frame their language when they're working across the desk so that it's not just there's no fines, but saying, you're checking out, this is your due date, and we need you to renew or return by that due date. And really working with staff about how to communicate that so that people know they still have to get stuff back.
And do those reminders go out through email also?
Yes, they do. And we are looking at and working on ways to send out even more reminders than we already do. So currently we send some paper notifications and bills. We send some email reminders and things like that. We're working with Jay and his department and Jamie and Brianne to try to figure out how can we really leverage the technology to send out as many reminders as we can in order to just, again, just really bring home that point that people need to turn their stuff in.
Madam Chair, I know this has been discussed in depth here, but are we the only library doing this?
No, we are part of a national trend.
Okay.
We
yeah, I've been reading about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Madam Chair, two questions.
Turn into a dog boy.
When is the proposed timeline where it starts? And then the second thing is, have we looked into sending reminders through text?
Yes. So we'll take those one at a time. So in terms of the timeline, hopefully y'all will prove this tonight. And then starting very soon, we will start really hashing out what that absolute timeline looks like. There are so many different pieces of it that go into play that I don't want to, like, overcomplicate, but we wanted to make sure we had the policy in place before we went too far. But we are hoping, at least within the new year, that that is when we would do it. We just need to get certain things in order to do that. And then in terms of texting, yes, 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 we want so badly to be able to text. That requires certain technology that we don't have right now. So that's another piece where we're working on how can we capitalize on and have a platform where we can do texting. So we are looking into those options and moving in that direction. It's one of the many moving pieces. But, yes, patrons really, really want it. And so we are trying to figure out how to provide it. Great questions. Yay. Thank you.
Any other questions?
I just have a question, Madam Chair, about just the process. Since it's going to be technology-driven, that's you, if it's 10 days over, you can't check out anything more. Will the library assistants be able to change that at the desk? Like, say, oh, can I just renew that then? I didn't get it renewed. Will they be able to go ahead and, or can I pay it right here? Will they be able to?
Absolutely. Yep, those flexibility pieces are in. So basically, just to let everybody know what would happen if I was that person who I had something that was 15 days overdue and I wanted to check out something else, I'd come up to Jamie and she'd take my card and she'd scan it to check out, and a little error window would pop up on the screen saying, whoops, Brandy is more, these items are more than 10 days overdue. And then at that point in time, Jamie would be able to have a conversation with me about what we can do, and I can renew, I can pay the fine, we can do those things to make sure that I'm still being served properly.
Yeah, the flexibility piece is really important. I just moved away because I didn't want squealing from the microphones. The flexibility is really important, and it would be a conversation like, oh, did you know that you have an item that's 10 days or 15 days overdue? We always try to build in flexibility. So if you were a mom in the middle of winter who dragged your kiddos in, and, you know, we would find a way to work with you. But, you know, just like currently, we have a one-time grace checkout. So I imagine that we would incorporate something akin to that. Good question, JC. Thanks.
Any other questions?
I would just make a quick comment. I should have pointed this out when Zuria asked the question earlier, but this is also in our strategic plan as a diversity, equity, and inclusion effort. So we are working ahead by starting this year, but in order to be ready for it at the beginning of next year, that's really what we need to do. And Brianne's department is ready to launch the fundraising campaign for year-end campaign based on doing Finds Free, and we think there'll be a lot of momentum around that as well.
Okay, Lee?
Even though there are portions of this effort that are automated, it still sounds like a fair amount of effort. Is there a point? Well, there is a point of no return, and I'll be damned if I know how to determine that. But, I mean, at some point, we're beating a dead horse, and I don't know how we get the dead horses out of the queue of people that we contact and the way we contact them. And I will not suggest that we track the number of times we contact these folks, because that's going in the wrong direction. So I don't know what makes sense, you know. At some point, I mean, the biggest Walmart has losses, Target has losses, biggest corporations in the world have losses. What makes sense in terms of giving up on this.
Great point. We will still be working with Unique. So if we have accounts with balances over $25 that don't get paid, they will be sent to collections.
Okay.
And then we also will continue to do revenue recapture for those accounts with significantly high balances, like over 150, I think, is...
I think it's 250.
Yeah. 250, okay. Mm-hmm. So we do still have some of those tools, but yes, there are some people who just never bring back their stuff, unfortunately,
yep.
The cost of business, but most people do. Mm-hmm. Most people do.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I do it just to shut you up.
What I see with this is it's a large amount of work to set it up,
mm-hmm.
but once we set it up and get rolling, it's going to be less work than our old system. Am I hearing that right?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. On multiple levels. So less work for, I know I'm not going to try to speak for Amy, but I know Amy has said she's kind of looking forward to it because of some of the efficiencies it will mean for her department. I also know a lot of our frontline staff are really looking forward to it because they want to be able to have good conversations with the public and not have to talk... Oh, I know you really want that book, but you owe 75 cents. Can you pay it? And then there's the whole conversation. No, I turned it in on time. Why do I have to pay it? It's not fun. I did see that eye roll, JC. and so I think that doesn't necessarily have a dollar sign on what that is, but in terms of the relationship that staff can have with the public and the positive experience that it enables the public to have with us as an organization is just huge. And I am just ecstatic that we are here tonight.
And well, it hasn't passed yet.
I know.
Sorry.
But I am such an optimist.
Just, I am too, as you know. And I think I have just seen how much staff time we put into our old system and what it's costing us. So I am looking forward to it. Less staff time, less cost in the future. And one of your reports listed the cost of our books and things that, you know, sometimes the fines were more than the cost of the flipping book, you know. So, okay. So we have a motion, a second, enough. Anyone else?
Zaria? Can I just make a comment? I think it would be really neat if at the end of the year, people who have returned everything on time get a letter of recognition from the library saying, you borrowed 50 items this year and everything was returned in time and really, really appreciate it because that would motivate me to do it even further. So it is a little bit of work, but getting that recognition, I think, would be good.
Unfortunately, I wouldn't be getting that letter this year. True story. So, anyhow, we do have a motion and a second, so we are going to vote on this. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion has carried. Thank you. Woo! Good stuff.
Thank you so much.
Okay, we just have a few more agenda items, but they are moving into closed session. We are going to take 5 minutes.
Have Julie hand out the evaluation.
Oh, that's right. First of all, 13.3, Julie. Sorry. 13.3, Executive Director Annual Evaluation Form.
Right. Some of you may remember this. Some it might be new, but each September I will pass out a form for you to complete the performance review for our Executive Director, Karen. And the forms need to get returned to me by October 15th. I'll include a stamped envelope for you to send them back to me. If you prefer to have the form sent to you electronically, my email is on the first page of the form that you could just email me and I'll send that out to you. If you remember, the form is basically you're checking whether she needs improvement, meets expectation, or exceeds. Those definitions are also on the first page. Once I get all the forms back, I will summarize them with the chair of the personnel committee and the chair of the board, and then we will have a meeting, a closed session in November with the personnel committee to conduct the review with Karen, and then it is reported to the full board after that. So let me know if you have questions. I'll pass these out and October 15th if you can. Thanks.
Thanks, Julie.
So, Madam Chair,
if I may, Julie, do we have a list of her goals that she listed? Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Dave. So once Julie's passed those out, we are going to be going into two closed sessions where we're going to need to be thinking and strategizing. So I want people to be fresh. So we're going to take, it is 7:21 and 22 on my phone. We will have 5 minutes just to stretch, walk around a bit, take a breather, use the bathroom, be back at 7:27 to move into closed session. Okay, we're going to
participate.
Get started here. And we are moving into closed session as permitted by the attorney-client privilege pursuant to Minnesota Statute 13D.05 subdivision 3B. So I am looking for a motion and a second to close the meeting.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Second.
Motion made by Ed, seconded by Zuria. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion has carried. It is 7:29 p.m. We are at the Great River Regional Library Building in St. Cloud. And do we have to do roll call? No.
We're going to cut the recording, and then
Patty's
going
to take off. And we are opening the meeting at 8:42 p.m. We have open forum next, but in the interest of time, we're going to skip that. We will spend our open forum traveling safely home. Lee?
Next meeting, we'll be talking about donations to the library by board members. And I didn't donate last year. I'm donating this year. And my suggestion is a per diem, one per diem payment minimum. I didn't last year. I'm doing it this year, and I'm doing two per diems. But what happened was only 42% of the board contributed last year, and we made a big deal out of employees contributing. Well, they came through. They did it. But we were lacking. So I'm saying it tonight. I'll say it the next meeting, and I'm doing my check tonight.
So thanks for the challenge, Lee. It is a great thing if you can have 100% participation by your board, and it can be $3 or $300. It doesn't matter at all. It's just it's really a good sign to your donors and your staff. So our next meeting is October 19th. We have a work session.
How many people can be here on October 19th?
Oh, that's right. It's
a lot of people have said they aren't available before 6 that or before 5 that day. So I'm just curious if we're going to have a quorum.
What day is the week is that?
It's a Tuesday.
Okay.
It's our typical meeting date.
Yep. But when I sent out that one is good, we had 8 responses and 7 people said they weren't available before 5. So I wonder, it was the only day I had that level of response.
You don't need any more training.
Don't we meet at 6?
Yeah, we do. Yeah. I was just hoping to schedule something right before.
Is that a work session?
Yeah, it's a work session.
6 o'clock work session on the 19th is our next time.
Okay. Well, we'll keep planning it then.
Okay.
What I would like to do is to make a thing on October 5th when you come back. I would like it. I don't know if can we get an email or something like that.
Work with the attorney and see what we can do.
I'd like to have an update and see what the hell happened.
$10 is the goal.
The library was closing for 15 minutes.
We haven't done this in a long time. This used to happen at every Great River Board meeting.
So you guys, thank you for this lengthy meeting. Our work is done, so we are adjourned.
Fearless
later.
8:45.
Oh boy,
that was a long meeting.
So you're gonna try and go?
Yeah, I will. Yeah.
I can't go.
Yeah, it's during the day.
I know you're
well,
there.
Yeah. Well, no, that. we have one missing. We're only at a 3.5.
Yeah, it's two.
Oh, shoot. Here's the evaluation.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't want to throw.
Yeah. No kidding. No kidding.
Oh, boy.
I hit a deer on the way home from St. Cloud not so long ago. Thank you very much, sir.